in nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Ave Maria, gratia plena, Dominus tecum, benedicta tu in mulieribus, et benedictus fructus Christi Jesus. Santa Maria, Mater Dei, ora pro nobis peccatoribus, nunc in hora mortis nostrae. Amen. Regina, Angelorum, nomine Patris et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. I see there are no questions in the box. Sisters, the box is empty. What I thought I would do this evening is begin going over the history of Eucharistic adoration. You have your copies, don't you, sisters? And what I'll try to do this evening is cover the first part on the Eucharist as present sacrament in the early church and up to including the first major heresy against the real presence. First of all, in St. Paul, as we know, St. Paul wrote in great detail about the Holy Eucharist. That is, in the first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 11, verses 23 to 26. Saint Paul and his disciple Saint Luke. Just to note, Saint Paul and his disciple St. Luke are the two most clear and definite on both the real presence and especially on the Eucharist being the sacrifice twice over between St. Paul and St. Luke. We are told that Jesus said at the Last Supper, "This is my body, which will be given up for you." And then, over the chalice, "This is the chalice of my blood, which will be shed for you." In both cases, Christ used the future tense, "My body which shall or will be given up, my blood which will be shed for you." And then, in the same first letter to the Corinthians, St. Paul is very clear about how the faithful should not desecrate the Eucharist, and not desecrate the Eucharist twice over, not desecrate the Eucharist by reveling, engaging in, well, useless conversation, when the sacrifice of the Mass is being offered. St. Paul is also the one who is clearest about saying we must be in the state of grace when we receive Holy Communion. Otherwise, we commit a sacrilege. Then, at the beginning of the 2nd century, St. Ignatius of Antioch and sisters, there are certain books that all of you should read. And one book you should all read is The 7 Letters of St. Ignatius of Antioch. He wrote those letters when he, as a prisoner, left Antioch, where he was a bishop, on his way to Rome, where he would be martyred. He wrote 7 letters to different people, Smyrnaeans, people in Philadelphia, people in Rome, 7 letters. Ignatius of Antioch died 107 A.D. is the most clear, outside of sacred scriptures, among the earliest fathers of the church, the real peasants. And hear it, St. Ignatius, I repeat, was a martyr. St. Ignatius of Loyola changed his name. His name was Inigo, which does not mean Ignatius. He changed his name to Ignatius because one of his great hopes was that he would be a martyr. And sisters, I think I told you, I've been praying for martyrdom at every Mass. This is my first Mass, and I'm still waiting. Ignatius, therefore, wrote about the real peasants in writing against the so-called Gnostics, as Gnostics, Gnostics. Gnosis in Greek means knowledge. Agnostic is technically one who knows, the knowers. They denied that God became a true man, and as a result, they denied the real peasants. That's most important, because what makes the real peasants real, sisters, what makes the real peasants real is Christ's humanity. God is everywhere, but God, as incarnate, has become man, is present on earth only in the Holy Eucharist. That's Ignatius of Antioch. Then, and remember, for the first 300 years, Christianity had to keep in hiding, underground. I may have told you, sisters, but the city of Rome had 40 miles of catacombs underground. Did I tell you that before? There's so much underground. City of Rome, the city has to forbid the building of any large buildings because they would cave in. And sisters, hear it. We are entering the age of the underground church. When I participated on Sunday in your procession, Corpus Christi procession, as I told your bishop, for I left, I want to make sure that I at least say one word to your bishop, for most inspiring experiences of my life.